Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Victory Over Self Radio. Victory Over Self, diving into all things athletics. We're incredibly excited and incredibly honored today to have on Coach Connor Hughes. And so, Coach, as we bring you on, we just want to give you a huge thank you for not only training one of the premier teams in college football, but also just the future leaders that we have here for our United States military. So, Coach, welcome, coming all the way here from West Point and training our Army football team. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And it's an honor to train our young men. It's also an honor to be here, so I'm excited to do it.
Yeah, and when I think of just your role, you're not only just training a football team, but truly men that are going to shape the future of America. So just, you know, the whole patriotic thank you for your service type of thing definitely comes with a sense of gratitude, knowing that there's men like you who are not only impacting young lives on the field or in the weight room, but also too just people that are going to be running the show here in the States one day. So again, a huge just thank you for stepping into that position and from, you know, an outsider's perspective, doing such a great job with it.
No, absolutely. And you said it. I might be coaching the next president of the United States right now, which is pretty elite. It's an awesome standard to have in our weight room. So,
yeah, wow. I didn't even think of it that way, but yeah,
maybe not the next president of the United States, but a president of the United States.
Exactly, and I wouldn't doubt it, right? So, how the original connection got made is Blair is coaching up there at Thayer Academy, and I hear it that in your future. In your past, you were once a Thayer grad. Do I have that correct, Coach?
Yes, sir. I graduated in 2004.
Wow. Unreal. Yeah. So I'm sure it looks the exact same, and I'm sure it's not too much differences there between that, huh?
Yeah, I honestly haven't been back in a long time, but I will credit that place. Every piece of success I've had so far in my life has been a credit to that place. I mean, I don't know how much you know about the school, but I think it's probably $60,000 a year now to go there. I was an inner-city kid, came up throughout an inner-city program called Project Deep, which was Dorchester Educational Enrichment Program, and they exposed us to some of these elite private schools around the Northeast. You go to camps there. If you did all your homework, if you did book reports, community service, things like that, and honestly, it changed my life. So that I credit a lot of my success at Thayer Academy.
Awesome. No, that's wonderful to hear. And so, as we start to kind of dig into the meat a little bit here, Coach Ross, kind of just had a question based off of, like, you have been at Army for a while now, and you've also just expressed on different podcasts wanting to stay there a bit, Ross, kind of get us started here with digging a little bit into the philosophy and kind of things like that.
Yeah, Coach, as Chris said, you know, you've been in Army for a while, and I've heard you say on a lot of podcasts, man, I don't plan on going anywhere. You know, we get to good places. You know a good job when you get to one. And so you've been there for a while here. How has your training philosophy and kind of approach changed over the years as you've continued to be at the same place?
So, training philosophy, I think, really it ebbs and flows, but the main things keep being the main things. Probably throughout my career, my training philosophy has changed but stayed the same, if I'm going to say that correctly. It's gotten way more complicated, and as I get older and deeper into my career, it's gotten even more basic. And a lot of the things I'm going to say today are cliche, but cliches are cliches for a reason, because the majority of them work. So we're going to do the basic exercises savagely well over a long period of time, and it's going to give us great results. That would be my training philosophy at this point. But as far as I've done everything under the sun, we've done 5-3-1, we've done conjugate, we've gotten into dynamic effort, velocity-based training. Really, the principles of just doing the basic exercises really well over a long period of time is what's been consistent throughout the 15 years that I've been a strength coach. Things that have definitely, my approach has definitely changed is just how to hire, how to manage your staff, and how to interact with people on a daily basis, which is, I think, a tribute to some of the success that I've had as a strength coach is getting really smart people, hiring really smart people who are dedicated, giving them a role, giving them responsibility and ownership, and then really just getting out of the way. That's been the biggest improvement, I would say, in the last 7 years of being here and having a full-time staff of four football-only strength coaches is I'm not going to run everything. And if I was to run everything, it would be a disservice to everybody on my staff and the players, because I can't be an expert at FRC, GPS, velocity-based training, sprinting, doing all these things. So it's evolves, but it hasn't evolved at the same time. I think of it this way, and I'm going off on a tangent here, but I mean, we're going to squat, we're going to bench, we're going to clean, we're going to do single leg work, we're going to row, we're going to do pull-ups. When we get outside, we're going to do this thing. And it's new, apparently, in the last couple of years, this thing. If you guys, I don't know if you've heard of this, it's called sprinting. Like, it's taken over. I mean, every coach on the planet now, 10 years ago, nobody was sprinting, but every coach on the planet now is sprint. I'm making a joke, but like the idea of like, yeah, you got to go outside, you got to sprint your guys, you got to do change direction, you got to condition them. It's the basic stuff.
I love that. So what's the, you know, as you said, you've gotten a lot better at hiring people. What is the one quality that you look for when you're hiring your assistants?
The truth. Yeah. So the truth. So my interview process is bizarre to say the least. I'm going to get somebody on the phone and I'm going to ask them not really one strength addition question. I'm going to try to get at the heart of who they are as a human being and where they will mesh with my staff. I've already known if I'm hiring a guy to do the GPS, I know he's done it at this place, this place, this place. I'm going to have three or four guys that have ran that implement, whatever it is, whichever it is, GPS, FRC, Olympic, whatever their skill set is. But then I'm going to try to put them on the spot. I'm going to ask them best thing that they've done as a coach, and I'm not talking about wins and losses. Your worst experience as a coach, and I'm not talking about wins and losses. All the way to what's the best fiction book you've ever read, and I'm going to put them on the spot and say, what song sums you up? What movie sums you up? What hard experience have you been through in your life that's gotten you to where you are? And I'm not looking for the fastest answer. I'm looking for someone to be authentic, and I'm looking to see if someone's going to get to that level of intimacy in a short amount of time, because that's the kind of people on my staff. I want people that are going to tell me the truth.
And so to quickly follow up on that and kind of cut in here, Coach, I've heard you mention a song on a previous podcast. Just kind of keeping it light here, don't reveal the song that like is an automatic yes, but what songs have people said like, oh, this is my favorite, Coach? And you either just scratch their name off or you go to listen to it later and you're like, oh, come on. Like, what are we doing here? There has to be a few.
So I'm going to make fun of Coach Blanick, who's on my staff now, who came from App State. He was the head strength coach at App State, and he crushed the interview. And then, I went to listen to his song, and it was, something Detroit. I'm trying to think of the name, but it might've been We Rock Detroit or something like that. But it was a techno song. I was like, oh man. And it was, but I listened to the whole song and I was like, ah, Coach B, that was his one downfall, but still ended up getting hired. But no, I haven't had many that, and to be honest, it's hard to think of the one song that sums you up, but, and again, I'm looking for dead space. I'm looking for somebody to think about it. And then I go back and I listen to him and it gives me a little bit more of a feel for that person.
No, I love it. Yeah. No, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
When I heard you mention that, it went off like, okay, what should they not be saying?
Man, I love it. So, Coach, I've also heard you mention your warm-up. Now, you might not want to go into detail, and I totally understand, but, you know, something I always try to do here, because I'm in Texas, and I get groups of 100-plus sometimes, and, man, we got to find a super quick and effective warm-up and get everybody going and get good energy going. What does that look like for you? I know it's got to be super detailed and you're flying through and you might take the whole time to get it learned, but then we're going to be really good at it. So what does that kind of look like for you?
So it depends if it's an upper body or lower body day. The upper body day is three exercises or four exercises total. It's high knees. And when I say it's high knees, I'm talking yelling, screaming. The guys are running their legs as fast as they can because there's an intensity to that of you hear 100 guys in the room yelling and screaming at the bottom of their lungs that it raises just it makes an electric atmosphere. And some people might think it's cheesy, but I tell you what, we do it every day and it doesn't seem cheesy. And then we're just going to do reverse lunges, single leg RDLs, push-ups. Then we go after that. That's a warm-up. Then Coach Mack will take them through FRC, run that for probably 3 minutes. Lower body days, the same thing. That high knees, we're going to stretch out the ankle, leg to the side, rocking, rib roll, stand up, reverse lunge, RDL, single leg RDL, body weight squat, FRC, go to work. So it's probably about 2 minutes for an upper body day and probably 3.5-4 minutes total for a lower body day. But everything, the attention to detail, like I've gone over before, is paramount. I mean, the standard for how we switch from one leg to the other, like when we go from ankle switching out to shooting our leg out to the side to rocking, like it matters. It matters how fast they go from ankle to leg out to the side. And there's a buildup of intensity throughout the warm-up that's important to us. If a guy's turning the wrong way, doesn't have everything correctly, we'll start it over. Which I've gone through on other podcasts. But really, the first 2 weeks with our freshmen, I mean, we may do that warm-up the entire session. And once you get that standard established, they're going to do it every day. Now, every once in a while, probably once every 2 or 3 weeks, we'll have to blow the whistle and start over because the guy just makes a boneheaded mistake and does the wrong thing. But, I mean, again, that's just locking them in, getting them more focused. And now our guys, like, they laugh when a guy screws up because they know that guy doesn't – he's not screwing it up. He made a mistake. He's not screwing it up on purpose. He's not – it's not that he doesn't know it. His brain wasn't in it, so they lock him in right then.
That's really good, man. I'm going to steal a variation of that. Absolutely. That's for sure. This will be my last question for me, and then I'll pass it over to Chris here because he's got a couple of FRC questions. When your guys first get to West Point, obviously they're going to be brand new to your system. They're going to be brand new to that lifestyle and that adjustment. What do you do to mitigate any of those issues when they first come in as they start that West Point career?
That's incredibly difficult. And so there's kind of two guys that join our team. There's guys who have been up at our prep school for a year, and then there's guys who are direct. And it's about 50-50 in our incoming freshman class. And direct means they came right out of their senior year of high school. We have a prep school on campus that probably 50% of our team spends a year up there. Now, the prep guys walk in, and so everybody, when they first get here, goes through our day. And then after that, they go into Beast Barracks, which is pretty much basic for about 4 weeks. Basic training. Now it's all on campus. Well, actually, they do. We have a kind of a training facility that's right off campus. But it's a mile down the road. That's pretty much in the woods. And they do that for about 4 weeks. Then we get them out a week early for that, so they can start fall camp. And we give them 3 days between Beast Barracks and fall camp to get ready for a college football season. Now, if you listen to our guys, Beast Barracks is incredibly hard, and it's taxing. It's more mentally taxing than it is anything else. But then you get into a Division I college football practice. And let me tell you right now, that is the most physically demanding thing that they're going to do at the age of 18 than pretty much anything they're going to do training-wise at that point. So it's over the long haul, it's educating them about how to take care of the bodies, educating them about hydrating, educating them about eating the right thing, getting in enough calories, and then recovery protocols that we use and that we can try to affect their recovery in the best way possible. But it's hard. I mean, they're not sleeping enough here. We do get them very adequate nutrition. You think about a normal college football player. If he stays up till 3 o'clock in the morning doing schoolwork, he can sleep through his first two classes. Nope. Our guys have to be at every single class every single day. Their day starts by 6:45 a.m. They have formation, go to breakfast, then they start the classes. So if they stay up crazy late doing their schoolwork, I mean, that morning wake up comes no matter what time. So they have to be there, and it's time management, a lot of it, working with them on that. But then it's also doing the right training and not pushing them at the wrong times and pushing the hell out of them when we actually feel like they can go. We've gotten much more effective in the way that we physically train our guys in the weight room and adjusting to their calendar. But we also get we've gotten much more effective just at using the GPS and using the Catapult technology to schedule practices and to practice plan and do things like that to keep our guys healthy.
So, Coach, I really appreciate just like your openness and really kind of like letting us know a little bit about what it's actually like and not just giving your kind of typical answers and stuff like that. And this is just kind of popping in my head. Everything you have described just seems so regimented. I've heard you say over and over the standard. And so my kind of just like personal question to you is, do you wake up every morning with the feeling of like, I was built to coach at this school? Or do you feel like you got there and you just rose to the level and you rose to the standard and you kind of had to work on yourself and your system a little bit?
So it's a mixture of both. I've never felt as at home at a school and it, on a coaching staff and with our players as I do here. And that's completely, I can't find the right word to describe it, but it's to me, it's very, very special. And like I said, I love it here. I love being here, but absolutely I needed to improve. You take your best five kids you've ever had at any other school and they have great attention to detail. They work hard. They want to be great. They're leaders. Now we have 100 of those guys. You look around with the people that we interact with on a daily basis, just the other coaches on staff, are the military officers that our guys take classes with, they're tactical officers, and you're surrounded by elite people who strive to be their the best version of themselves every single day. You absolutely have to level up, or you won't last here. I remember when I first got here just being like, and I thought our players would be yes sir, no sir, like so, and they are soldiers, and they are yes sir, no sir, but they're normal 18 to 22-year-old college kids. I mean, they deal with the same things that kids in a normal school do. They deal with breakups, they deal with issues with their family life, they deal with issues with their teammates and their classmates. So it's similar but different. And really, like I said, I feel so at home here, but I had to get better at a number of different things when I walked in this door. And there's many times here that I've felt inadequate. And you think about the strength coach in a normal place. He and some of it might be false bravado, but he walks around like he's the toughest dude on the planet. Like, I know for a fact here that I'm never the toughest guy in the room. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, it's not even close. Like, I walk around and these dudes are, I'm surrounded by badass dudes and badass women all day long. I'm not the most badass guy here. There's no doubt about it. So, like, it's very interesting to and humbling to be at a place like this. I couldn't have survived here at 18 years old. I couldn't have. Just the academic load, the time management, the stress management, I wouldn't be able to do it.
I just really appreciate the honesty and insight there, because I know for me, when I talk to people, it's just like, oh, I can never make it there, or I'm not built for that. But it kind of just seems like if you do have that dream and you have that passion, you could adapt to the areas and you could adapt to the surroundings that you're going to be placed in. But also too, of I just appreciate you kind of saying of like, hey, I came in here and I needed to level up. Like, I was just surrounded by elite people. I just think it's going to be helpful for some listener out there and just kind of having that insight. And you're just in such a unique position, because like you said, take the best five character or just wholesome people on a team and imagine that is your entire team. Imagine taking all your leadership on your team and that is your entire team. So there's just, there's a level there, but I appreciate you just being honest of, hey, when I came in, I'd still had to level up. So just gives hope to a disorganized lack of communication coach like myself as well. So thank you, coach.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned FRC and, implementing that. And I believe you said it's Coach Matt, that will run that, during your warm up. So, can you just go into a little bit of the why? Hey, we do this because, and then if there's any, you know, like miracle positive change type of stories you have, if you could share those a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. So our kind of our journey into using FRC actually started with Coach Blair Vaughn. So when I thought about when I was a coach at the FCS level, a head strength coach, I thought about when I get an FBS staff, this is what I want to do. I want to have a guy who is in charge of the speed development, a guy who's in charge of the FRC or the mobility type training. I want to get a specialist who can deal with all the technology and kind of hire young men or young women to fulfill those roles. So when I was hiring probably 4 years ago, Coach Blair Vaughn, who's now at Arizona as the associate head strength coach there, he had all these certifications in mobility training. And part of my interview question was, how would you implement that to the team? Will it actually help us? And the instant he got here, I said, all right, now that's yours. Run it. You're in charge of all mobility training for our football team. And he went really deep with the FRC. And what it has allowed us to do is become more mobile and get stronger in end ranges of motion. Coach Mack is now taking that over when Blair left, and Coach MacArthur, Anthony MacArthur, is phenomenal at it. He's got a little bit of a different attitude than Coach Vaughn did, and it's now mobility with an attitude. And our guys work hard at it, and it's we do it for really probably 2 minutes before every single lift, whether it's an upper body day, lower body day. Different exercises for what we're trying to do. We do it for 5 minutes at the end of every single practice, and then we do 2 30-minute sessions a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays with our guys that are mostly optional, but we'll have 80 guys in the room doing FRC just because they want to get better, they want to improve their mobility. And we've seen dramatic changes in, number one, our soft tissue injury rate. Now, there's a stat out there that Coach Vaughn coined, and Coach Mack stands by it, that from the year that we implemented to FRC to the next year, that we were 2.5 times less likely to get a soft tissue injury on our team just from the incorporation FRC. Now, obviously, we got better with training at that point, too. We also got smarter with how we practice and how we prepare our guys for practice. So it's probably some chicken, some egg, but they all worked in conjunction with each other to get our guys to be less susceptible to injury. So I'm a firm believer in it. If you were to ask me, like, hey, what exercise is the best one for hip external rotation? I'm not going to be the guy to ask. That's Coach Mack's deal. And when a guy is going to take over something like that in this program, I give them left and right parameters. Like, this is the time you got. This is what I want it to look like. This is how organized I want it to be. But whatever you want to do outside of those, that's you. And gives people ownership, and they want to get better at it, and they feel like they are the expert in that area because they are the expert in that area. And it for Coach Mack, the most important part of our training session, and he's going to hate that I say this, is that FRC, because it's the time that he is in charge. He's the head strength coach at that point. I'm his assistant.
Tons of follow-up here, if you don't mind. What kind of, like, cemented it in of how important it is to me is you're taking 30 minutes twice a week to expand and have longer duration of FRC. And remind me, did you say those were optional, or are those?
Yeah, they were optional. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So they don't fit into our 8 hours. So we don't do those, but 80 guys are showing up to that. So it's,
which is incredible with the, I'm just going to call it the scheduling load that it seems that a West Point cadet has on top of football. Wow. Okay. What do you, I mean, you kind of mentioned and hit on it. What do you attribute to that kind of buy-in? Are you as a staff promoting how important it is, or would you say it's a bit of that combined with, like, guys are just seeing results, feeling better and moving better?
I think it's a combination of both. When we first implemented it, and I'm 38 years old, when we first implemented it, I was 34 or 35, and I'm broken. I was a wannabe kind of strongman / powerlifter, never competed or anything like that, but I pushed my body to the limits of what I could achieve, and I have horrible mobility. So, and that's probably my biggest regret in my career, is just I'm banged up now. It's sad, the things that I do in the weight room strength wise, just because I always get hurt. I can push myself to the limit and squat 500 pounds and bench 400 pounds at this point, but I get hurt every time I do it, so I just stopped. But so when we first started doing it, and I knew our linemen weren't going to fully buy into this mobility training, so I just did it with them. I would do it every optional session. I would just jump in, and I was a player at that point. And what that did was, because I knew my big guys would kind of give it grief and not want to do it, but they see me out there just saying, hey, this is important, and this is, I'm bought into this, so you guys should be bought in this. And really what our guys did was that they bought in. And then as soon as they started seeing results, they were more mobile. They could reach depth easier on a squat. They could, I mean, some of our big guys can do splits and things at this point. Like, that they feel better and they stay healthier. I mean, they're going to continue to do it.
No, I appreciate that. And just a good lesson too, of what you make a big deal out of, they will make a big deal out of it. And I want to go back real quick, something you said pretty quick there, of when you were at the FCS level, you had this idea of, when I get to FBS, I'm going to have a this guy, I'm going to have a this guy, I'm going to have a this guy. Talk to me, and you don't have to go crazy into detail, but do you feel like that helped during your interview? I know you were an assistant first, but I don't know if there was, steps involved to becoming the head guy there. Did the military enjoy that kind of, hey, I'm going to set up a team here? Or, is that just, standard practice if you go to interview for these big jobs to have, your ducks in a row, of make sure you're covering all your bases with a particular skill set for each coach?
That's interesting, and I don't really have an answer, because to be honest, I had a 2-year interview for the head strength conditioning job here. I was the first assistant for 2 years. I actually interviewed for another head FBS job a year before I got this job. Didn't get the job, but when I got back, Coach Munkin came to me and said, "Hey, I heard you interviewed for this. I'm sorry you didn't get it, but he said, if Brian ever leaves, I'm gonna make you head strength coach tomorrow." And from that point, I was like, "Well, Brian better leave soon, because I ain't ever leaving this place if I know I can get the head job here." So as far as how that would affect an interview, I'm not really sure. But I would think that you would have to have some sort of a plan together. And I've watched guys go and interview for head FBS jobs that have been my assistants here, and they do have a whole plan together of what they're going to do staffing-wise, what they're going to do training-wise, all that stuff. So I wish I had a better answer for you, but I really don't.
No, that's great. And I'm just kind of throwing, random ones at you that are
no doubt in
my head. So I appreciate that and kind of the honesty there. But from, my outsider's perspective, I thought it was a great strategy going in. So
no doubt.
I appreciate that. And kind of segueing now, you've mentioned it, on previous interviews, you've already mentioned it once or twice here. And that is like, hey, I want to stay here at Army. Like that's a goal that I have. But anyone who follows college sport and just knows the weight room of it's a very, not stable position. There's a lot of volatility and you just never know year to year. So I'm in the same position. I'm here at Liberty University. I tell everyone I want to die and be buried under the ice here. So what is it, or kind of what sort of steps are you taking to kind of make sure of, like, hey, I'm going to be unfireable. I'm going to make sure I could stay here as long as I possibly can. Because I think everyone wants job security, but they might not have the insights that you may have.
So I had a number of thoughts when I saw this, and I actually started laughing when you said when I saw this question on the sheet, because I was like, the instant you start thinking that you're unfireable or start putting yourself you're going to get fired. There's no doubt about it. And the other thing that Coach. Coach Bob Ford, who was the first head football coach I ever worked for up at the University of Albany, he was the head football coach there for 43 years, took them from a club sport all the way to the top of division, the top of FCS football in the CAA, was the only head coach at that point. He used to have a saying. He said, there's two types of football coaches. There's ones who haven't been fired. Oh, no, there's coaches who have been fired, and there's football coaches who haven't been fired yet. So the idea of not getting fired, obviously you try not to. And the thing that I see that gets most young coaches in trouble is that their attitude and their energy kind of goes like this. They're motivated, 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 motivated. All of a sudden they're burnt out and they go underneath. And it's on those downsides that gets everybody in trouble. Your coaching ability should go like this over a long period of time. Just very slowly increasing. And I'll give you an example from when I was at Albany. They brought in and I'm not going to name the sport, they brought in an assistant coach who their first 3 months wanted to change the absolute world. And this wasn't with football, this was an Olympic sport. I didn't even work with that team, but I saw it wanted to change the world and was doing all these extra sessions every day with student athletes doing extra. And I remember looking and saying, that's unsustainable. Like this person is not going to be able to sustain that. And little we know, 3 months later, it was unsustainable for that person. And it would be unsustainable for a normal person. So for me, it's about controlling what I can control. And people will think I'm crazy for this, but I have a rule on my staff. And I ask, part of the interview process, I ask, is this rule fair? If you are late once to a training session as a coach, so say we have a 6 a.m. workout, we're here by 5:15. If you are late once, you're fired. That there's no ifs, ands, or questions. Now, that's not saying your child gets sick, you get a flat tire. If you give me a heads up notice at 4:30 or 4:45 that, hey, this is what's going on in my personal life, that's completely different. But if you just sleep in and you miss it, like, that's something you have complete control over. I've been a strength coach since 2008, so now that's 16 years. I've never been late to a session once. I've never I missed 3 days of training in that entire 16 years, and that was the 3 days my wife and daughter were in the hospital after my daughter was born. That's the only time I've missed. So that's something I can completely control. Telling people the truth is gonna keep you on the right path. And I have a saying: when you tell a lie, you make the problem your own. When you tell the truth, you make a problem everyone else's. So I'll give you an example here. If Coach Munkin comes down and says, "Hey, Connor, I want to see the bench press maxes," and I go into the computer and I type up all this stuff and use some sort of percent max and get, and I go in there and I hand these sheets, and the average of the offensive line is 315, and he sees all these numbers, he's happy with that, and then he walks up to our starting center and says, "Hey, I saw you bench 405. And the starter says, "No, I did. I hit 385, not 405. There's no decision that needs to be made with my job. I've now falsified information. I haven't given the correct data. I've lied. So there's no trust there. But if our starting center only benches 385, coach has to make a judgment call whether I've done a good enough job getting ready for that. But when you tell a lie, that's absolutely, you can't expect someone to trust you from that. Then on out. And if it's wrong, fix it. And this is the thing that I I'm going off on a tangent here, and I got a bunch of, I wrote down a bunch of things for this one. Meaning if you walk by a guy and his squat depth isn't correct and you don't fix it, that's a miss. If you walk by a piece of trash in the weight room that's on the ground that you didn't pick up, that's a miss. If you walk by the nutrition center and you didn't restock it, that's a miss. I hear a lot is like, "Oh, I never got my chance. It's a boys club. It's a boys club. It's an old boys. Everybody's connected." It is. It is about who you know, but it's absolutely being when their job comes open that someone calls me and says, "You have to hire this guy. There is no one better in the country than this guy." For someone to put their name on the line, like, you have to do all the extra. And the idea of like, I never got my chance yet. Bullshit. Like, you got your chance when you walked by the nutrition center 3 times today and you didn't stock that shit up. You got your chance when that kid was cleaning and you let it go because you didn't want to hold him to the standard. And his technique wasn't right. He wasn't squatting to depth, but he was a starter. So you just said, I'm going to walk right by that and I'm going to tell him it was a good job when it wasn't. That's it. And the thing that I have to understand and that everybody understands, if I left this place today, 2,000 people would apply for this job. There'd be 200 people that would walk here from wherever they were to try to take this. So that's the reality of working in big time college football, is that yes, there isn't a lot of job security, but you can have job security or you can have the elite level of salary and compensation that head football strength coaches get. So it's take your pick. I mean, it's here though, there. That's part of it. But also, like, being financially literate and taking your personal finance seriously is a failsafe for coaches. And I think that I educate every single one of my staff members when they come in here. One of the first talks I give them is about personal finance. And then I'll bring in every young coach from all different sports will come in here and spend an hour or 2 hours going over the basic details of personal finance. And just like everything else, a lot of it's behavioral, but then it's just knowing the rules. There's a bunch of rules. It's an easy game to win if you kind of understand how it works, but it's also an easy game to lose. And then, like, it's just, it's the idea of, and I've heard this before, like, I'm not going to coach effort. And that's, to me, that's absolute bullshit. Like, my job is to get 18 to 22-year-olds excited to work out every day. You think I'm not going to coach effort on some days? You're crazy. Like, I'm going to absolutely try to bring out effort, try to bring excitement to these, because I control my attitude and my effort. And my attitude and my effort impacts the group. If I walk in there, and I've seen it, Coach Brandon Reyes is a great example. I'm a yellow streamer swearer. I get excited. Coach Reyes can get to that point, but he is way more cerebral than me. He's not yelling, screaming every single set, every single rep, but there's a quiet intensity about him that the guys respect. And he was a phenomenal assistant for me. He's out of Colorado now. He's a phenomenal strength coach out there. And our coaching style might be polar opposites, but we both get it done because his attitude and his effort is a quiet intensity. Mine might be a loud intensity, but there's a spectrum there. But I can control my attitude and my effort every single day. So that's the one, I went off on a tangent there, but the idea of never missing, like, I can't let anything that negatively happens in my life affect how I train that group that day. I need to shut everything down and get them excited to train, because it might be my fifth group of the day, but it's their first time in the weight room. And again, that's cliche, but when I was at Iona College, that's my first head job. I took over at 24 years old, which is 45 minutes south of here. I worked from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday with a break on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 1 to noon. The entire other 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., I was coaching. There was hour. And I did that for 11 months before I went back up to Albany. And one interesting thing about that is, like, my coaching ability, because I got so many reps in, I screwed everything up that I possibly could screw up at Iona in those 11 months, that I was so much more polished when I went back up to Albany, just because I'd made every mistake you could make in those 11 months.
I do hope, Coach, that you'll take the time to re-listen to that answer, because I think it was absolutely perfect. Like, you covered everything. You kept saying, like, oh, sorry, I'm, you know, a little long-winded or ranting or whatever, but no, it was perfect. Like, just feedback for you, big takeaways for me of, you mentioned it right off the bat, white belt mentality at all times. Don't ever think you're unfireable.
Right? Yeah.
Just stay hungry. Have really high standards. Be financially literate. Like, man, that's such a great one. And I could see just your heart and rate of, not raising up, but training up, like, a great,
no doubt it is,
with you and things like that. So thank you for just, like, that.
Absolutely.
There. What part of the country are you from? You're from the Massachusetts area?
Yeah, I'm from Boston originally. So okay. Dorchester is a, you know how, like, there's the Bronx in New York City.
Yes.
And there's Brooklyn. It's one of those. It's what they would call a borough. It's a neighborhood in Boston.
Okay. Wonderful. Yeah. I grew up an hour outside in New York City. So, Northeast in the blood a little bit, and it's starting to come out a little bit in your talk there of just,
no doubt.
It takes the right special kind of person, to do the job that you're doing. And it has to be a Northeast guy. Like, you need that thick skin. You need to be able to bring the heat a little bit.
No doubt. So,
yeah. No, I love it. And really, I love to ask questions for, hey, what do I wish I knew, like, 5 years ago? And at no point did you say squat this, clean that, bench that, but the useful information that you just provided, like, I gotta be honest, like, I'm gonna be coaching here in a couple minutes. Like, I am fired up to go in there.
Good.
No Good. One better be late. May God.
No doubt. No doubt.
If they are. great. And kind of going along those lines, Blair was, you know, kind of asking of, you know, personality or being the main driver in the weight room. You've touched a little bit on that, but I think there's some more details that we could kind of pull out of you. So Blair, just kind of ask that question of, you know, being the one to sort of bring the heat in the weight room, so to speak.
Yeah, Coach, first of all, we got to get you back to Braintree as soon as we can.
No doubt.
Have you at there for a little reunion, I guess, with the school. Was talking to a couple of old couple of the old dogs at the school, and they still remember you there. So we got to get you back.
Good deal.
But yeah, talking about attitude and energy. And I've heard you say on another podcast, and I love this, be the thermostat and not the thermometer. And you know, talking about bringing the effort yourself. But can you talk about how you and your assistants set the temperature in the room each day and what the atmosphere is like there? So if there was a fly on the wall, what would it be like for that fly?
So the way I'll kind of describe it is, and this is what I tell parents of recruits, is if you were to come in and you didn't know anything about strength conditioning, you didn't know anything about training, you'd come in and you'd say, this is absolute organized chaos. I mean, this chalk, the music is, the chalk's all over the place, there's chains clanging, there's weights clanging, there's guys yelling, screaming, excited, the music is as loud as we could possibly get it. I'm yelling, screaming, swearing, getting people excited, my staff's yelling, screaming, swearing, our guys are lunatics in the weight room. But if you were to watch our guys train and watch what we use as coaching points and then watch the execution of what our guys do, you would say, this is an absolute awesome atmosphere, and they are elite at what they're training them to do. And that's, to me, that's the most important thing is the attitude and the excellence of the technique and the performance, that those are, they're in conjunction with each other. And they feed off one another, but I have a belief that human beings can pick up on other human beings' energy, both in a positive way, in a negative way. And like I think I said earlier, is you control your own attitude and energy, but the attitude and the energy of people around you, it affects you. And I need to first set the attitude and the energy with my staff. And before every training session, and if I know it's going to be a tough one, like we had a mat drill last week, and then we came back in, we had a lift that afternoon, and I kept saying to my staff before, I said, if we come in here after this lift and say, oh, these guys were dead, that's our fault. It absolutely is our fault. 99% of the time, when something goes wrong in a training session, I can take it back to something I didn't explain or organize well enough. And if you have multiple training sessions throughout the day, normally we have two big groups. If the first group screwed it up and I made adjustments to the second group and adjusted how I explained something and it was better, obviously I explained it better with the second group. It wasn't the second group is much more understanding, can figure things out better than the first group. It's just I explained it better. So when things go wrong in a weight room, it's normally the head strength coach's fault. It's the attitude he's setting with his staff, and then the attitude that we set in the environment we set in the room. 15 minutes before we start a training session, the music is absolutely blared in the weight room. So when our guys come in, they might have had the longest day of class and in a bunch of tests and had papers due the night before. But then when they walk in, they hear that music coming from a mile away. They go in those doors and there's a coach greeting them, getting them excited. As they walk through and they get ready for the dynamic warm up, the other three coaches are buzzing throughout the room, just talking to guys, getting the energy up. We will start, so our first group will be at 3:40 today. I will stand in the weight room office until 3:39 and 59 seconds. And then the instant my watch hits 3:40, I will sprint in that room, hit the whistle. They'll all start doing high knees. We'll have the music run on our phones. We'll press pause at that point. But we're setting the standard for how it's going to be that entire time. And the music choices, they matter. I mean, I want to play things that the guys like. We have a multiple edited mixes of all rap, rock. But we're going to set it up for, if we had a heavy squat day, it's going to be Meek Mill and Rick Ross. It's going to be things that these guys enjoy listening to, but that's also going to get them excited. And then, to me, the other atmosphere part is whenever we're doing a main exercise, that's all we do. And our racks are deep. Our racks are four to five guys at each rack. Now our guys buzz. And like how they switch in the dynamic effort from one exercise to the other is how they should change weights. And the idea of, like, one guy taking his sweet time, loading a 10 on, like, it takes down that the energy of the group. So they know, like, if they're not buzzing around, switching the weights, not correcting each other, not getting excited, like, the energy of the group's taken down. So it's ownership in each other, in each rack. And then for us, it's being excited. Like, we get to train and we earn our paychecks during those workouts. I mean, we might be here all throughout the day and multiple hours, but we're getting paid to perform in those hour and 50 minute workouts twice a day. So you better be juiced up for that 2 hours, because that's all you're getting paid to perform at that point. So that's, to me, it's every day in there should be the Super Bowl, and that's the intensity I got to take with it. So,
Coach, that's a fantastic answer, and you called it organized chaos. And you also are taking a lot of the onus for the effort of your team and bringing the energy, and that you're feeding that energy to them. But what I really heard from that a few times was the word standards. And you recently shared a picture, and I remember the t-shirt said, high expectations will not survive low standards. And I wanted to ask you, first of all, where can I get one of those t-shirts? Because that's phenomenal. And I want that at there 100%. But
absolutely.
But to you, what Army football standards do you see as most important? And is there, you know, a big sign on the wall that these are our standards? Or is it just ingrained from day one, this is what we got to do?
So we have three team rules. They're do right, do your best, and show people you care. And really, that's all-encompassing. I mean, if you're doing right, you're doing your best, and you're showing people you care, and you're not going to fall out of line with anything that could go wrong. And you're not going to go against societal norms or team norms if you're doing those three things. And it leaves some up for interpretation, but there really isn't. If you're doing your best and you're doing the right thing, and you're showing people that you care about them, and showing people that you care about your work and you care about the team, like, you can accomplish some great things. But the high expectations will not survive low standards comes directly from Coach Monken. And when I tell you, there is no man in America I'd rather work for than Jeff Monken. There is absolutely, I don't hesitate when I say that. The standard he holds for everyone involved from the program, from myself, the coordinators, the position coaches, all the way down to our student interns, is incredibly high. Now, the standard he holds for himself is unattainable by a normal human being. He is, without a doubt, the hardest working man in this building. There is zero question about it. His work ethic is unmatched. Now, he holds a high standard, but you want to work hard for a guy who's holding himself to a standard that you can't attain, that I know that I cannot attain. So it's an awesome experience as an assistant coach and his staff to know that whatever he says, he will do as hard and harder than you every single day. And I'll give you just an example of him. And we've all worked with, we've all seen or heard about football coaches or different sport coaches on social media coming in and trying to coach an exercise a certain way. Jeff Monk is the head football coach here and won a lot of games, won the last 5 out of 7 against Navy, the last 6 out of 8 against Air Force. He comes into our weight room, and he comes into every single workout. If he's not on the road recruiting, he comes into every single workout. He might be here for 5 minutes. He might be there for the entire session. But what he does is he comes in, he listens to the coaching points we're giving, and then gives those exact coaching points, watches for what we're saying, and then we'll give those exact coaching points. And if he's got any confusion about what he sees, he'll come and ask the coaches, hey, what is this guy doing? How do we improve this? And it's awesome for him to, and that's part of the ownership part, is that he lets us own this. And when he comes in, he wants to know, because we're the experts in this area, he wants to know what he can say to help push our message better. But really, the standards are here, and people hate mat drills nowadays. They hate them. And the way that we do mat drills here, it's indescribable. And the way that we do mat drills here is what everyone else is attempting to do in mat drills at this point of the year. What the attention to detail and the intensity and the focus that our guys need when they're tired in the drills that we do and the way that we run it is so incredibly high, to the point where we go up as a staff after we get done with mat drills and we watch the entire thing. And if we're as a staff, because there's 130 guys doing mat drills, and this I counted one day when we were doing the thing, there was 75 people working this mat drill. Now there's trainers there, there's strength coaches, there's interns, there's position coaches. So they're held accountable to every single rep that they do, and we're as coaches held accountable to every single rep that we coach and we watch. And there's a win and there's a loss at the end of our mat drills. It's not just we go out there and we make them tired. Like, there's achievable goals. And I would love to describe it, but it would take me an hour and a half, and I would not do a good job of it. But the margin of error in college football is this big between winning and losing. The margin of error at an academy is even smaller. We can't afford to go offsides. We can't afford to blow coverage. We can't afford to have holding calls, to not know our plays. So we need to hold an incredible standard in every detail so that carries over on the field.
Awesome, Coach. That's a great answer. It's something I aspire to where I'm at, is just raising the bar every year. I think the standard's been pretty low, and so there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you know, you went to Thayer, so you kind of understand the private school setting, but there's a certain level of entitlement, and you know, especially the way that a lot of high school sports are now with club teams and all that stuff. There's a lot of movement and students are all over the place. So I've got a lot of work to do as far as building that or growing that buy-in and raising the bar there. But I wanted to ask you, and I'll turn it over to Ross after this question. But I wanted to ask you how you see yourself and your team of coaches making the program better going forward. So you're already doing FRC. You're already using GPS, the catapult systems. You're sprinting. You're doing all the classic strength and conditioning stuff. I know that you've got tendos and everything there. But what I want to know is, how does Army keep beating Navy every year?
And I looked at this question. It was easy to answer, but also very difficult to answer. It's less of what do we do to continue to improve, but how do we raise the ceiling on what we're already doing? How do we continue to push the envelope in our training, with our work ethic, with our standards, with a new group every year? Because we get guys here for 4 years. And I was saying to somebody the other day, it feels like Groundhog's Day. This is what happens at this point of the year. This is what happens at this point. This is what happens with guys at this point of the year. This is what happens with their attitudes in February. This is what happens during mat drills. And you get into a rhythm. So it's about doing the things we're doing already with a higher degree of detail and with a renewed work ethic. I'm trying to remember this quote directly that Coach Monken has said multiple times. So give me 30 seconds here to try to think of it. It's something along the lines of the greatest complacency is, I'm trying to think of the exact word, but it's pretty much that complacency is the greatest adversary to a successful organization. There's no detail too small in a successful organization. So it's about not just, a lot of people come to work, like come to work. You go to work every day, but not everybody comes to work. Like, you need to come to work every day as a player, as a strength coach, as a position coach, and continuing to bring that same energy and not let it become repetitive. And know that every day, every single one of these challenges that you've pushed through, you're going to have to push it through again next year, and it's going to have to be harder and going to have to be better. So it's yes, we have the GPS. We have the perch system now. We have the run rockets. We have urinals. We have things in our urinals now that test our guys' hydration. We have all these. It's crazy. We have all these gizmos and gadgets, but it's again working harder and outworking everybody. But not just working harder. It's doing things with such a high attention to detail that you continue to see success. Because I don't think that 95% of even college athletes have hit their genetic potential, where we need to do outrageous amount of different training with them because they're so strong or they're so fast. Not the majority of them, you can improve by just doing the basics savagely well over a long period of time.
Man, this has been really great, Coach. Two more questions for you and then we'll wrap it up. Sound good? Okay, so
yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to follow up with your the high expectations will not survive low standards. In our roles, typically a strength coach is going to have normally some pretty high expectations in what they want to do. What do you think you can control, or how can you impact if you've got super high expectations, but you're in an environment outside of your control that has low standards? And I know that's kind of counterintuitive of you can control the weight room, but I can't control how a community feels or how a whole athletic department feels, but I can control my weight room side of it. So I do understand that equation.
That's hard. And here we're talking about human dynamic and human interactions. And because I don't feel that here ever. Yes, if you get what I'm saying, it's and it becomes complicated because there's, I've gotten this question from, and similar questions is, how can you, if I'm an assistant coach in a strength staff, and the head strength coach doesn't think this is important, how do I make this important? Or how do I uphold the level of detail? And it's hard, to be honest. If you can develop such a level of buy-in with the student athletes that through being your authentic self, through developing relationships and their ability to be able to trust you, that you're not going to lead them astray, both in their training and outside of their training, that even if you're not in charge of that drill or that practice or that game or that you've instilled this mentality of not quitting, of do right, do your best, show people you care, that hopefully you can change enough hearts and minds that in the leadership with what you do in the weight room and start whispering it, because a great leader can inspire other leaders. And get that message so that when you're not in charge, that they're still pushing that message. Now, incredibly difficult to do, but that would be my best suggestion. Because it's when you're not in charge, it's hard to, like, if you're a strength coach, it's hard to hold the standard of practice because that's not your role. But you might be holding the standard in the weight room. But if you're truly changing hearts and minds, and the kids believe in you, like, you can have an impact on them and talk to them before, hey, this is what I think you need to do better. And this is what I think the standard needs to be with this. And why don't you uphold that standard? Meaning talking to the players. Cause I mean, to me, leadership is, I don't believe that, leadership by example is a thing. To me, it's not, leadership by example to me is the standard. That's what everybody should be. If you're just doing everything right and nobody's following you, you're not a leader. So the ability to have influence with other people, and to do that, you need to be authentic. You need to tell the truth. You need to – you need to have shown up with enough reps that they trust that what you're saying is the truth, that even outside of your realm of responsibility, they're going to believe you when you give feedback on certain things. But the highest level of leadership is spurring leaders to reinforce your ideals, even when you're not around. So, I mean, I gave you a long-winded, not really direct answer there, but I think it's possible. I mean, it's going to be really hard. It might take years, but it's worth it.
100%. No, power of influence, man. So yep. Last question for you, Coach, and it's kind of two questions in one, but it'll make sense here. I'm at a high school in Texas. We're all and Blair's obviously mm-hmm. there. And what are some things, you know, just be one or two, whatever you'd like, of what can a high school coach take away from watching an Army lift? And what are one or two things that you find that your guys lack when they come into it that a high school coach could help improve?
So 14 years ago, I would have given you a completely different answer. I used to say there was three types of kids that came out of high school, walked into a college football strength and conditioning program. Guys who have never trained before, they're easy as hell to train. Guys who have trained with a good strength coach before, they're easy as hell to train. These used to be the smallest minority. And then guys who had been in a weight room where it was, hey, we value heavy weight with no technique before and bad habits, those guys. This used to be two-thirds of the team. This used to be maybe a tenth, and then this one would be the other part. So honestly, it's improved. High school strength and conditioning has made college strength and conditioning jobs 1,000 times easier because the guys are so much more prepared physically, technique-wise, mobility-wise than they ever have been before. And that's just going to continue to improve. So if a high school coach came and watched our training session, I would hope that they would see, because we do things differently than other people. I mean, I posed a question on Twitter the other day, is there a correct way to do an exercise? And me and Coach Mack and Coach Morris and a few other coaches were talking back and forth, kind of bullshitting about it. And yes, I mean, if you look in the NSCA textbook, there's a correct way to do an exercise, but it's the idea of like, if that exercise is being done with the intent of what you want of the way that you want it to be done, even though it might not look like it does in the book, you're doing it for a specific reason and they're doing it the way that you're asking them to do with the same intent. Like, that's the correct way to do an exercise. We bench press differently than anybody else in the country. People think I'm crazy because I don't care if they're ass on the bench or not. Yeah. I've never had a complaint about our upper body power. We're strong as shit. We got 15 guys that can bench over 405. We got strong upper bodies. Now, we don't have their butts on the bench, but who cares? They're not powerlifters. But if I post a bench press video, people will go, oh, that doesn't count. Yeah, okay. I don't care. I'm going off on a tangent here, but I would hope that they would come in and say, hey, this is what they're trying to do with all of these exercises, and this is the reason why, and what the kids are echoing and what they're doing is exactly what they're asking to do. Because it can get horribly confusing and horribly overcomplicated, and things can get really bastardized, I think, in strength and conditioning, to the point where everybody's trying to chase 15 different rabbits. And to me, I just want to do the basics really well over a long period of time. That's it. So I would hope they would get that from me. And then what was the other part of the question? Just, well, what do we want to see more from high school guys? I mean, if a guy can come here and he can do a goblet squat with 100 pounds to full depth and not lose his brace, like, I'll take care of the rest. Like, that's what I get paid money to do, is get guys big and strong. So if they can show up here with mobility, like, we'll handle the rest. But the guys who come in with just bad habits from doing too much weight, those are – and they're few and far between now. I mean, it's night and day to what it was like 10 years ago, night and day. So just doing the basics really well, a long period of time.
I love it. Yeah.
With a great intensity.
That's something. Yep. I also oversee middle school here, and I cannot wait till those guys and girls get into the program, because now they've had 2 years under their belt. And when I get them as freshmen, they're going to know what to do day one, which makes my job a lot easier as the high school coach.
It's unbelievable. And it's if you can teach something to somebody at I don't even know what 11, age 12. Middle school kids are. Yeah. Are they 11, 12, 13? Yeah, if they get that, if they learn how to do those things at 11 and 12, they'll never forget them. And you're setting them up for success, not only in their athletic life, mm-hmm. but for the rest of their lives with training and being mobile and being healthy. I mean, that's awesome. That's commendable. I mean, that sounds like a lot of fun. It sounds like it could be complete. I started as a high school strength coach. So my first couple jobs were at my uncle's strength and conditioning camp at Boston College High School, in Boston, Mass. And man, if you can teach a 6'4" sophomore backup tight end how to do an RDL, you can teach any world-class athlete to do anything. Because like a 6'4" sophomore tight end who weighs 260 pounds but is 30% body fat in high school, like those dudes don't know how to do anything. And they're already tight and immobile. So like if you can do that, like and doing it in middle school, it's probably easier, honestly, because they don't know any bad habits. But if you can do that with a 14-year-old kid, you can coach any athlete on the planet to do any movement.
No doubt. That's why the first thing that we teach, I first movement that I teach honestly is RDLs, because if they can RDL, they can typically squat. Like if they can squat, they can't always do an RDL. So we're always hammering that RDL first. Personally, obviously, we're going to squat, but you get the gist.
Yeah.
Well, Coach, we'll wrap it up here. Man, we really appreciate you coming on, and you've got some really great points on here. I loved all the leadership and figuring out how to fit in your system, talking about your warm up and what you do. I know I'm going to take a ton of notes, and I'm going to have to hold myself to a higher standard. I'm very, very inspired today, making sure I'm not going to be late, making sure the kids aren't late, all that kind of good stuff.
No doubt.
We'll keep rolling. But man, really appreciate it. Obviously, guys, you can follow Coach on Twitter, Connor Hughes, I believe it's 67, on the Twitter, on the X, and then we'll go from there. But Coach, man, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Victory Over Self Radio. Episodes are available anywhere you listen to podcasts. We also have videos and clips of each episode on our Victory Over Self Radio YouTube channel. Like and subscribe, and let us know if there's any person or topic you'd like us to cover. See y'all next time.